This is The Loving Project, a podcast celebrating the 50th anniversary of the Supreme Court decision in Loving v. Virginia, which struck down state laws banning interracial marriage.
In each episode, we hear from a different couple about what it's like to be in an interracial marriage today. This time, we hear from Sean and Jen.
Sean is Black and grew up in South Philadelphia. Jen is white and grew up in central Pennsylvania before her family moved to the Philly suburbs. They live together in Lansdowne, Pennsylvania, where they're raising their 2-year-old son, Wyatt.
Sean and Jen have been together since 2004 and realized early on that sometimes they approach things from different perspectives. For instance, there was the time when Jen asked Sean to do her a favor and go to her parents' house in the suburbs.
They were on vacation or something, and I was not able to go feed the cat or something like that. And so Sean went out to feed, or I asked him to go out and feed the cat. And he was like, I can't just go walk into their house and feed a cat. And I was like, oh, yes, I guess you are right. Like, that could be seen as him breaking into a house. Had I ever thought about that? No, absolutely not.
It's not like I had to explain it to her. It was sort of like, well, consider this. And that was it. She was like, oh, right. I hadn't considered that. So,
you know, even where my parents are living now in upstate New York is not a diverse area either.
No.
And we recently had a situation where we had gone on vacation and we took Wyatt to a playground. And there was a white family there. And, you know, I mean, it was very overt.
It wasn't subtle at all.
No.
The guy sort of saw us coming, turned, looked at me. He was like, come on, let's get out of here.
And took his kids and left. And we were like, oh, well, okay. Your loss. I mean, your kids were having fun.
My name is Sean, and I'm African American.
My name is Jen, and I'm white. And we got married in August of 2015.
And we have a 2-year-old son named Wyatt. My best friend has been trying to fix me up with Jennifer for a long time, who was a friend of his fiance, and it just never really quite happened. And unfortunately, he passed away suddenly. Of course, I was close with his fiance, and eventually through his fiance, we met, and we're almost inseparable from the time we met.
Yeah, I had heard about Sean for a long time before that had happened, and just our paths just never crossed. And then unfortunately, when his friend passed away, we met, and I remember seeing him walk in the door and pretty instantly knowing that he was going to be the one.
First thing I remember was the fact that you were had your shoes off, feet up on our friend's couch, and was just totally comfortable and relaxed. And I knew I liked you immediately and that we were going to be close.
Mm-hmm. And we joke because, like, I really did think that he was the one. And I know he didn't necessarily think that I was the one. But I did. I really did. I had heard a lot about him. And I feel like when I first saw him, he was going through a really, really difficult time. And kind of the strength that he was portraying and his like ability to, I don't know, get through a really difficult situation was just, I found to be very endearing and totally drew me to him. It was this kind of strange time where it was like he was going through a really difficult time. We were trying to support a mutual friend, but then we were also kind of growing this budding relationship that was also really exciting. And I think that pretty much right after we first met, we started kind of hanging out. And we'd hang out as a threesome, and then we slowly kind of moved to like it just being him and I. And then we had our first date at what used to be called Zando's, it's now called Cozy, where we had s'mores and we stayed up talking on, like they closed the restaurant down and we just stayed outside. And I think we were outside till like 2 or 3 in the morning.
2 or 3 in the morning,
just talking. And I was like, oh, this is it. This is totally it. This is my guy.
I was born and raised in South Philadelphia. My mother passed away of scleroderma when I was 7 years old. And so my grandmother kind of picked up the reins and took me in and raised me from 7 years old to an adult. The same year, my favorite aunt passed away just after she had a child. And my grandmother again took him in too. So it was me and my little cousin, an infant. And she was a very strong and interesting woman. Started out as a housekeeper, eventually got her beautician's license, opened up her own beauty shop and ran a beauty shop on South Street for years, and was just retiring as these double tragedies hit. My high school experience was one of diversity, you know, being around folks of different ethnic and socioeconomic backgrounds. So I've never felt particularly uncomfortable in diverse settings. I'd never really thought about dating or marrying outside my race. It just wasn't anything that I'd really thought about or considered. And as it became clear that our relationship was getting serious, I had a few misgivings, mainly to do with, you know, children and, you know, what the experience is going to be and how society is going to look at us and look at our child or children. I should say that I've kind of been overweight my entire life, so I know what it's kind of like to have something that's different that people want to pick at you about, and it's just, and it's kind of hard, particularly going through adolescence. And I was concerned that it would be something that would set him apart, you know, whether it be children or adults or into adulthood, just not feeling fully accepted or feeling like he belongs in one world or the other. And as time went on, it seemed clear that the world was kind of pushing all that silly, superficial stuff to the side. I mean, I certainly was. And it seemed silly to worry about such a thing. Any concerns that I had really just kind of faded away as our relationship got stronger and really became to the point, why wouldn't I move forward? Why wouldn't I allow this relationship to work? It's the best relationship I've ever been in. There's no way I'll ever do better. So it would be foolish to throw it away over something as superficial as skin color.
So before Sean, I had dated outside of my race. I did realize it was a new thing for Sean, and I knew that there could be some interesting dynamics that may happen family-wise. I will say in terms of our families, my family is very white. And Sean's family is very black. And when we go to family functions, I'm essentially the only white person when we go to Sean's family functions.
Not anymore.
I blazed the path a little. However, when Sean comes to my family functions, he is definitely still the only black person, probably in the entire town. My family's up in central Pennsylvania. I lived in Bellefonte. My dad was basically the only doctor in town. And my grandfather was the only pharmacist in town. And my father was offered a job at Jefferson Hospital in Philadelphia. And he very purposefully took that job because he wanted my sister and I to experience more of the world. Take us out of that kind of small town and experience opportunities that we would not otherwise experience. So the move was very purposeful for my family to come to Philadelphia. Well, not really Philadelphia. I grew up in one of the suburbs of Philadelphia, to give us more of an opportunity. So he was kind of realizing that it was a very small town. I mean, if I think back now in elementary school, I think there was maybe one kid that I went to school that was African American, but that was it. I mean, that was really my exposure.
It took a little time. For me to gain sufficient confidence to go out to central Pennsylvania.
You had also had some difficult experiences while you had been in central Pennsylvania.
Well, yeah, when I was in college, I did a summer internship for the National Science Foundation at Penn State. And after years of living in Philadelphia and years in the Army, I go to central Pennsylvania, I go to Penn State, and it's the first time I was called the N-word. Some guys driving by in a truck just yelled it out. So because it was a summer program and there weren't a lot of students who were, pretty much everyone there was from around the area, and it was not pleasant at all. But I have to say, when I went to, I think it was Thanksgiving, or was it Christmas the first year I went?
I think it was Thanksgiving.
Jen's family is awesome. I'm so happy I got to meet your grandfather, mm-hmm. who recently passed away. He's a wonderful man. Everyone is, I was accepted immediately with no hesitation. So I love them all. They're my family now. Mm-hmm. And I'll be the first to admit, when we first started dating, mm-hmm. like when we would go out, I'd kind of, be looking out of the side of my eye just to mm-hmm. see if I could catch the funny looks or, the rolling eyes or whatever. And there was some of that locally, but it was the exception rather than the rule. But yeah, in central Pennsylvania, sometimes walking around, people just kind of stare, pause, mm-hmm. and not say anything. Since that one time at Penn State, I haven't experienced anything overt, but there's still the vibe that you can feel sometimes.
And I will also say, we don't spend much time there. We go up for holidays, and as crazy as it is, we drive up in the morning and we come home at night. So we just kind of spend the time at my grandparents' house. And I think that's just kind of a family tradition that we have in general that also then kind of works for our family, because we don't need to necessarily be there all the time. I would not say anything in our relationship we jumped into at all. We took a long time to do a lot of things.
I'm a very deliberative person.
Yes, Sean is very deliberate. So we got married in 2015. However, we met
in 2004. And we moved in together in 2008.
Mm-hmm. So it took a long time for us even to move in together. Which in hindsight, I think was really good for our relationship. And we both grew as individuals. And that allowed us then to really grow as a strong couple. And we bought a house together. And we purposefully picked the area that we live in because of kind of the diversity of this particular area. And knowing that we wanted to be in a diverse community where our neighbors looked like us. At that point, when we bought the house, we hadn't really decided whether or not we were going to have children, but if we did, we wanted to make sure that we would be in a community that would be accepting of our child. Wyatt is what I would consider very, very light-skinned. He's got blonde hair. It's curly, but it's not too curly. So he could absolutely pass as a white child, not necessarily a biracial child. And so I become more, when we're in central Pennsylvania, kind of keenly aware of people looking at us when we have him with us. We had an incident, even here actually, where Sean went into daycare to pick Wyatt up, and they handed over a little girl who was African-American. And he said, no, that's not my child. Wyatt's my child.
In their defense, they had a stand-in who was in, and there were only two kids left. She didn't hand the child to me. She said, oh, you're here for the princess. And I was like, no, I'm here for the prince. And she paused, and she's like, oh, just one second. And the director, of course, who knew me, because I pick him up all the time, was like, oh, yeah. But, I mean, really, it is what it is. You know what else was interesting? When I'm with Wyatt by myself, or when we're together as a family, we often get the comments like, oh, wow, look at his curls. Oh, those curls are so beautiful. Oh, look at his blonde hair. It's like, I think people are trying to be kind, but it's obvious that they're kind of,
confused, or
either confused or just like, the comments are because he's biracial. It's like they see me and they're like, oh, look at that hair.
And it's gotten
a little uncomfortable.
Yeah. Sometimes. I mean, it's gotten to the point like where we can't go out without five or six people stopping us and talking about how adorable he is and how cute his hair is. And, at first it was flattering. And now we're both like, okay, this is getting uncomfortable. And we're not quite sure how to answer those questions. And there feels like there's a racial undertone to it. Yeah, he's cute, but there's a lot of kids that are cute. And it's like over the top. Over the top.
Every time we're out together, it's like we can't get out of a store without people stopping and saying, oh my gosh, he's adorable. Look at his hair.
So it may be that people are trying to over-affirm, or that they feel comfortable with it, which in my mind means that they don't. And we've also had some interesting comments where, like, I will be with him by myself, and then I'll happen to mention maybe that Sean's African-American or that he's biracial, and then they're like, oh, that makes sense. I don't know what you were thinking before.
Do you think he was part Martian?
I don't know. So anyway, it's been an interesting dynamic now having him and reactions that we get from people. And we also both realize that this is probably something he's going to have to deal with the rest of his life. And thinking about how do we help him feel comfortable in his own skin and be proud of being both white and black, you know? And his little favorite book right now, which I think is fabulous, is called I Am Unique and I Am Black. And he loves that book. And I love that he loves that book. And so we're starting to do some really purposeful things to kind of make him feel more comfortable in his own skin.
You want him to be proud to be him.
Yeah, just proud to be him.
We have a few masks around the house, some, you know, medium brown, some light brown, some very dark brown. And occasionally Wyatt will pick a mask up and say, Daddy, Daddy, which is odd. He never picks up a mask and says, Mommy. He always says, Daddy. So he's obviously aware that we appear different.
But he also picks up the lightest mask we have and says, Daddy.
That's true.
I think he's beginning to realize it a little bit. I think when I'm out with him without Sean, sometimes he'll say Daddy to, you know, another African-American male.
I did not know that.
Yeah. So which would lead me to believe that I think that he is starting to maybe know or realize that we are. Also, again, this little book that he likes to read, like he loves to look at the kids. And the kids are all biracial to varying degrees. But I think there are subtle things that he's doing that make us realize that he probably is a little bit more aware than we realize.
I'd like him to be able to really feel like he can be friends with, have relationships with anyone. And why shouldn't he? Mm-hmm. I'd like him to feel like, well, of course, Dad, that's stupid. Of course I can have relationships with anyone and be friends with anyone. Don't be silly. That's what I like. That's what I like to see.
And that he gets every opportunity that every other child would have. I do worry about the whole police situation. Like, those are lessons that we are potentially going to have to teach him. That, again, based on my white privilege, I don't have to navigate in a way that Sean has to navigate. I think that there are still a lot of black men that are being pulled over and being harassed by police in ways that white folks aren't. And that's just kind of the world we live in right now. And I think there are things that we're going to have to teach him to navigate that, again, I will have never had to experience.
You know, as an African-American male, you often just don't get the benefit of the doubt. If you're driving an expensive car, people won't just assume that it's yours. Or, you know, if you're, you know, shopping, you know, it may not be assumed that you're actually shopping. And I'm referring to when I was much younger. You know, I'd be followed around in department stores all the time. I remember an incident. I used to hang out on South Street a lot when I was a teenager. And my friend and I were standing in front of the Tower Records, and there were a few Caucasian kids that were actually sitting on the sidewalk, sort of right next to us. And this police paddy wagon pulls up, and this huge cop, African-American cop, comes up to us and says, keep moving, you can't stand here. And we're like looking around. And I'm like, well, what do you mean we can't stand here? And of course, my friend is much smarter than I was at the time. He's like, come on, let's go. And I'm like, what? Why? Why? Look at them. Why can they stay there and we can't stand here? I don't understand. There was an incident in Lower Merion, profiling incident there, pulled over for no reason. In fact, the police officer was behind me for about a mile, pulled up next to me, looked over, saw me, and then turned his lights on. I mean, it was the strangest thing. I mean, it was so blatant. And in fact, when he turned his lights on, I didn't even think it was for me. The light turned green and I just started going and he pulled up behind me. I'm like, is he really pulling me over? So those are the type of experiences I don't want him to have. I want him to feel like, you know, when he has the benefit of the doubt.
I knew about the Lovings and their story, but it just more recently hit me like that it's only been 50 years. I think it's crazy that it has only been 50 years. That just seems like such a short amount of time to me.
You know, on the one hand, it's only been 50 years. On the other hand, up until recently, I thought, wow, we've come so far in those 50 years. And after what's been happening in the last year or two politically, you start to wonder, like, wow, was I pulling the wool over my eyes as far as the progress we've made as a nation and, you know, all the statistics you hear about younger people being more accepting of diversity, you know, sexual diversity, racial diversity, and so forth. And then, you know, what happened in 2016 happens. And then you wonder, you know, is this the last gasp of this sort of white supremacy in America, or is it a resurgence? So I've had very conservative friends in the past. We've always been able to have reasonable conversations, and I could see their point of view, fiscal conservatism and so forth, and we could talk. And there are just some views that I see, particularly from like older friends from the military that I've caught up with on Facebook, where I'm just like, wow, I just can't understand how you could say that or think that way. And that's a little scary, the fact that I feel like I can't actually even have a conversation about it.
And I think that what we have also found is that since all of this, we have sought out people who have similar views that we do in a way that we didn't before. And also, I have found myself wanting to get very politically active because, like, I need to do something. And I don't know what that is. And so I'm, like, dabbling in a bunch of different things. But, like, I have to do something.
And yet always in the back of my mind thinking about, I don't want to be in an echo chamber either, because that's not doing any good. You're not changing anybody's mind. Yeah. You're not hearing from the other side and understanding what their concerns are. So, yeah, it's a tough time.
We'd like to thank Jen and Sean for sharing their story with us. The Loving Project is available in iTunes, Google Play, NPR One, and just about anywhere else you can find podcasts.
You can find out more about the show at our website, lovingproject.com. That's where you'll also find links to follow us on social media and pictures of some of the couples profiled on the show. I'm Brad Linder.
And I'm Farrah Parks. Thanks for listening to The Loving Project.
In the next episode, we'll hear from Len and Fernando. Len is white, and Fernando's Chinese-Cuban.
The couple's been together since 1981, but as a gay couple, they had to fight to be able to get married more than 30 years later.
And thanks to the American Civil Liberties Union in Pennsylvania, we were one of 10 plaintiffs who filed a lawsuit against the Commonwealth for the right to get married.
During the legal proceedings, Len says he and Fernando were both questioned by lawyers for the Commonwealth of Pennsylvania in a series of depositions.
I don't remember the specific questions, but I do remember just the odd sense of being grilled by a woman representing the Commonwealth about what was it really that we would gain, why did it matter, those kinds of things. And it was a very odd set of questions to be trying to cope with. It didn't feel like I should have to justify any more than anyone else thinking about getting married would get interrogated by a public official about why. Why do you want to do this? What's so important about it?
Len and Fernando's story, coming up next time on The Loving Project.